Welcome, everybody, to episode 273 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, May 17th, 2017. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, and we've got a great show lined up for you today. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. In fact, it has been since about 1949 by Mental Health America and their affiliates. And mental health is something that is a topic that's been discussed quite a bit in the WordPress community as of late. I know especially last year into this year, I know one of the talks out there that's really been raising awareness of mental health is Corey Miller's Iceberg Talk, which has gotten quite a lot of views, and he's gotten a lot of great feedback on that. And then there are other people in the WordPress community who have also spoken about mental health mental health, raising awareness issues around it. And those topics are on WordPress.tv and definitely worthy of viewing. But today I have two great guests on the show, and we're going to just have a general conversation about mental health. What is it? How we can help people dealing with mental health issues, and talk about the stigma surrounding it. And hopefully you enjoy the conversation here about this increasingly important topic in the WordPress community. So my first guest is Bridget Willard, who is the marketing manager for WordPress. She's the co-host of WP Blab and co-organizer of Women Who WordPress Meetup. And she's also a member of the WordPress marketing team. And then I also have Ed Finkler, who's also known as Funkatron, who started making websites before browsers had frames, which is a long time ago. He does front-end and server-side work in Python, PHP, and JavaScript. He's the lead developer and head of developer culture at GraphStory. And now his current passion is raising mental health awareness in the tech community with his open source mental illness OSMI speaking campaign, which, by the way, there's a fundraiser going on right now, and it's nearing the – actually just past the 50% fundraiser mark, so it's about 27K, 50K. And, you know, thank you to both for being on the show. And I guess since I already mentioned it, Ed, what is the fundraiser goal for, and what would the funds be used for?
Oh, yeah. So we formed as an open sourcing mental illness, formed as a nonprofit 501c3 organization last year in September. And so it'll go to doing things like paying for travel to speak at conferences. It will go to sponsorships for us to go and have booths at conferences, things of that nature. It also helps us create handbooks, create video presentations, and to do research that we do some of the only research that's available in the tech community about attitudes about mental health and prevalence of mental health issues. So it'll support, those are sort of the main primary things that we'll be working on. Also, it will help us with outreach to mental health professionals so that we can bring them in and they can help us with doing things like making sure our resources are up to date, accurate, and creating new resources, things of that nature. So that's really kind of where that money goes, is to those kinds of activities, which are ones that we've done some of in the past, but we're doing a lot more now. It will also go to some extent to pay a bit of my salary, because I'm actually going to be stepping down from my current position, and starting on Monday, which is the 21st of May, I'm going to be doing OSMI as my main job.
Oh, wow.
So I'm stepping. It is a big change. I'm going to need to do some consulting to kind of, pay the bills and stuff like that for sure. But some of the money will go to cover that so that I can work on it full time. Not a huge amount of it. We're trying to keep the percentage of salaries pretty low. It'll allow me to dedicate a lot more time to getting things done.
And if people are interested to learn more about OSMI or to donate, you can visit osmihelp.org. Mm-hmm. That's the website. So to give our listeners sort of a foundation here, I want to start off at the beginning. I'll start off with you, Ed.
Okay.
let's start off with, what is mental health? Physical health, yeah, I get that. I know what that is. It's staying in shape, managing your weight, doing stuff like that. But what is mental health?
Well, you know, that's a good question. It's a little bit vague because sometimes we don't understand exactly why the brain works the way it works or why it does the things that it does. But mental health generally deals with issues of how people think and feel and behave, and whether those things are relatively normal, relatively with, so that's how we define healthy. They seem like they're behaving in sort of a normal manner. And if they behave outside of the norm to a great extent, then you'd say that there was maybe some kind of issue there mentally. And so a lot of times it's a little bit hard to quantify, because a lot of things that we see, sometimes they may actually be, for example, we have a fairly good idea of the thing that we call depression. And we can look that up. We can see like what the DSM-5 definition of depression is, and depressive disorder, or things like that. But the causes of it can be complex. Sometimes there are reasons that are purely physical. And for example, there's just a disorder in the way that the brain works, or there could be issues with things like the balance of glandular issues and things like that that happen inside in the body in terms of producing different chemicals in the body, things like that. But then there can also be psychological issues that we don't have as good of a feel for about, why that. So things that aren't necessarily, we can't pinpoint and say, oh, well, if we change this physical thing, that's going to fix that problem. There's often these psychological issues about the way that we think and behave, and that are actually at the root of those kinds of issues as well. So there's a definition on Wikipedia that says it is the quote psychological state of someone who is functioning at a satisfactory level of emotional behavioral adjustment, unquote, which is I guess that's pretty accurate, but it's also a pretty significant philosophical question about what's normal and what's not. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I think what it gets into is it's stuff that has to do with how you feel in sort of emotionally and psychologically. And do you feel healthy or do you feel upset? Is there something that's wrong? And does it seem like it's wrong a lot, often, or to an extreme, then there might be something more serious going on than just sort of the general state of living for an average person.
You know, and what is normal is an interesting question in and of itself. I remember in elementary school, my health ed teacher saying, you know, what's normal for you is normal. I don't know. The more I think about that, the more I don't know if I agree with that, but yeah, I mean, that's a crazy question to think of on its own is, you know, what is normal? And if this is the way I feel normally, is that really normal? I mean,
there's some people who feel, and I don't think that this is necessarily incorrect, that they worry a little bit about the use of the word mental illness, because that necessarily implies that somebody whose brain works a certain way may be defined as ill, and maybe it's just their brain works differently. Maybe that's not exactly an illness in a certain sense. But so I try to kind of simplify it more. If somebody, you know, dealing with emotional or psychological issues, or you know, if they're unhappy in some way, if it's making them less productive, if it's impacting their life negatively, then I think there's probably, you know, there's something wrong, and there's something that they should work on. You know, whether or not that is a normal thing or not a normal thing or what have you, I think is to some extent irrelevant. What matters is, do you feel okay about it or not? You know, is it a negative thing or is it a positive thing? So I sort of try to be pragmatic about that.
And Bridget, feel free anytime here to chime in, but do you have a specific definition that you have in mind in terms of how you describe what mental health is?
So I was a psych major for a year until I decided that that wasn't my correct path. I don't have a problem with the term normal or illness, because I believe if you see the truth, then you can deal with it. And I think that in some ways, it's dangerous to not look at something as an illness. Illness isn't bad, but if you don't understand what's happening, you can't fix it, right? Now, we're dealing with mostly developers. So if your code is bad and you get a white screen, are we going to say that that's not normal? Right. Because it's not normal. We don't want a white screen on a website. I think that we can all agree on that, right?
Right.
So in order to fix it, you have to recognize, A, that there's a problem. And there is a truth that Ed brought up, that we do have our own normals, but if we don't have some kind of standard, then we don't have the tools to fix it. And why I'm so passionate about this in the WordPress community is because we are made up of people who primarily believe in a binary world, whether they are willing to admit that or not. Where they excel is things that follow the rules of logic. Emotions do not follow logic at all. And so what I've found is that people that I've talked to through my open process of grieving this year, I've lost my husband 23 years ago, May 31 of 23 years. I can speak, I promise. So I was married for 23 years. He died a year ago, May 31. And so I've been talking to a lot of people in our community, visiting WordCamps and all these things, because of my openness has been what I call emotional hospitality. So I am open, and because I'm open, they tell me things about them. And so the thing is that if I actually had to go to my doctor and I said, okay, here's the thing. Depression runs in my family, right? And a lot of times addiction and alcoholism, especially in a poor community, is self-medication, which also runs in my family. So when I had so much anxiety at month 8 that I felt like everything was so impossible that I couldn't even make a step forward. I don't even know how I worked. I said, I got to talk to my doctor because this is not normal. Right. I know that grieving should be bad, but I also know that in my family, what is normal is depression. See what I'm saying? So yes. I went to my doctor and I said, listen, and she told me, you shouldn't be sad. You shouldn't have any anxiety. It's been over 6 months. I go, no S-H-I-T, right? That's why we're having this conversation, lady. Could you just give me like some kind of something? And she goes, well, I can't give you anything that's addiction forming because it runs in your family. Yes, I understand that. I told you that. So finally she put me on an SSRI Lexapro, and I'm like, 2 weeks in, I was like, whoa, my brain works. This is amazing. I have ideas. Da-da-da-da-da. Like suddenly everything was going light speed. I couldn't believe I felt so normal. I had not felt that normal in 10 years, right? But I just thought, because my husband died, of course I'm sad, and that's normal. And then I thought, well, there's something wrong with me because I'm not dealing with this well. But then I found out, guess what? I really needed to be on an SSRI. Do you see what I'm saying? So us deciding that, well, normal, no, it doesn't really matter. It's super relative. It is, but it's also not. I think that if we look in a mirror and we smile and there's spinach in our teeth, we have a compelling reason to remove the spinach. And I will shout it from the rooftops and tell everybody I'm on Lexapro and I'm never going back. Because I can't even believe the amount of creativity and ideas and energy that I have, that I have literally, I'm not exaggerating, have not had in over 15 years.
Wow. Well, one of the, you know, in my research of mental health, and one of the, there's two common themes I've noticed between all the presentations that happen at WordCamps with, you know, like I mentioned, Corey Miller's talk, Rich Robenkoff has done a talk, Leo Gopal founder of WP Hugs. He did a talk. There's these two recurring themes. A, people in the crowd go up to them after the session is over, whether it's in the hallway or just after the session's complete, and they tell the presenter how brave they are for coming out and speaking about their battles with mental health or mental illness. And the second is that they're so happy that they shared their story, because this means that they're not alone, that they always thought they were alone. But because they went through that presentation, they know that they're not the only ones dealing with these issues. And Ed, talk a little bit about this stigma about, people thinking other people coming out about it as brave, but really that's part of the stigma of people just not being able to be open about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that there's it's the case that while we certainly speak a little bit more, we speak a bit more openly about mental health issues now than we did, say, let's say 20, 30, 40 years ago. We certainly do. And we're far less likely to, use, to sort of dismiss it as a character flaw or someone's being lazy or, this or that. Mm-hmm. That is the case that still we don't treat a discussion of mental health the same way that we just discuss, say, very serious illnesses like cancer, heart disease, mm-hmm. diabetes, things mm-hmm. of that nature. And that's despite the fact that the World Health Organization says that neuropsychological disorders are the most important cause of disease burden in the world. That they account for 1/3 of years lost to disability within in North America. Mm-hmm. So you're dealing with, if you look at that category of illness compared to, or that category of disease as compared to other categories of disease, it rivals or exceeds things like cancer and cardiovascular disease and things of that nature. But at the same time, the research that we've done, and we can all think of anecdotal stuff, but the research that we've done where we've had done two different surveys, one in 2014 to one in 2016, both of which had over 1,000 respondents, and they found that people were 5 times less likely to discuss a mental health condition in the workplace than they were a physical health condition.
Yes.
And 88% of people felt that being known as someone with a mental health issue would have a negative impact on their career, would absolutely have a negative impact on their career. Only 12% said it would not or did not.
Right.
So you're talking about those kinds of numbers, and so you're dealing with a very widespread major category of diseases that cause severe disability in many cases. Mm-hmm. The World Health Organization compared the disability of severe depression to that of quadriplegia. Yet we are unwilling to discuss it, and for fear of being thought of as lazy, or there's something wrong with us that we have to, or we're just, why can't we just do a better job, or it's a character flaw, or things of that nature. And it's simply the case that I certainly cannot think of a significant, serious public health issue that has been solved by not talking about it.
Exactly.
By not speaking openly about it. Every single major health issue that we deal with is dealt with by raising awareness about what to look for, about how, why it matters, what are the signs for it, and how do you get treatment. And we have major campaigns for things like breast cancer and lung cancer and heart disease and diabetes and things like that, because they're all major public health issues. And for the most part, we don't have, it's not that it doesn't exist at all, but our willingness to discuss these things or our lack thereof, absolutely, 100%, keeps people suffering in silence for no good reason.
No, and you're right. So I grew up in a codependent, dysfunctional family. And in Al-Anon, they say, you're only as sick as your secrets. And that's the main reason why I'm so open on social media, because it's a rebellion against the secret keeping, right? Mm-hmm. So the thing is that it does take a lot of bravery, because once you start telling people stuff that is so close to your identity, I mean, it's almost as terrifying, or possibly more terrifying, than disrobing and walking down Main Street. We would never do that. Well, unless you're a nudist. But I'm just saying that the reality is, the things that people have said to me this year, you guys, I could make a whole stand-up routine on the ridiculousness of the things that people have said to me. Telling me to get married while he's still on his deathbed. Literally, his body just flatlined. Oh, you should definitely get married. Like, should we do it at the funeral? Should we just double book it? Like, do you have somebody lined up? Or why haven't you started dating yet? What is it, laundry I'm behind on? Are you guys kidding me right now? Right. Or if I'm feeling sad, well, they'll just say, well, just do this or just do that or just do this or just do that. And I'm telling you that I have felt amazingly supported but amazingly dismissed at the same time. And the thing is that it's really difficult because it's so close to our identity. And there is retribution. I mean, if we're still in a world where women are asked at job interviews if they're getting married or planning on having children, which is a total violation of every law imaginable, but it still happens. Yep. And I've heard people say, oh, yeah, that guy has bipolar. Like, almost as like, oh, he writes bad code, which is shameful. And I've called him out on it too, because I'm not going to let somebody talk about one of my friends that way, or anybody. You know what I'm saying? So it's not just awareness. It's also being the person who says, that's ridiculous, and you shouldn't be allowed to say that. You know, that doesn't mean that you're not capable as a person. It means, like, if you are diabetic, like Ed mentioned, you might sugar crash. That's reality.
So in this vein, I wanted to kind of bring this up, and I think Ed kind of alluded to this in one of his presentations at a WordCamp. How do we help people who may be battling with mental illness? Or, you know, I know that you said there is a specific program, Mental Health First Aid, I believe. It's an 8-hour course that really allows you to kind of teach you to look for the signs. And I know empathy is a big part of it, and listening. Yes. Maybe share some tips on how people can help those who may be dealing with mental illness or struggling with mental health.
Yeah, I think what's really important to remember is that people that unless you are a mental health professional, you should not be trying to solve people's problems for them, their mental health issues. You're not qualified to do it. And that's something that I think, particularly among developers or other people who are self-taught often in the work that they do, there's this expectation that, well, I can learn to do anything. And two things. One, there's this expectation, I think, among all human beings that we naturally think that our experiences are universal. And so the way that I feel right now is the appropriate way to feel. And everyone else who does not feel that way, they must be doing something wrong, which is
it's kind of it could be related to WordPress. I use this feature in WordPress and a plugin, so it should be in core. Well, no, exactly. Millions of other people don't use it.
Exactly. And so that's just kind of the way I think human beings tend to be. And I think you have to catch yourself to get yourself to not do that. Your experience isn't universal and your feelings aren't universal. And just because you think something, you really like something or you feel a certain way does not mean that it is the appropriate way to feel maybe it's fine, but that's for you and that's not how other people feel. So I think a key thing is remember that you are not going to fix someone's problems anymore. Then I'd prefer you to not try to, you know, say diagnose me and tell me solutions for my psychological issues any more than I would prefer that you did not try to do surgery on my knee to fix it. You are not qualified to do that. I would really this is a very much more complex issue and complex problem than you are qualified to handle, even though I understand that you maybe wrote a couple WordPress plugins, but that does not qualify you to do this. It's a very complex issue and it's different for everybody. So that's an attitude I think you have to take where you listen and make sure you understand before you give advice. And I would just generally probably advise that you don't give advice. But what you can do is if you really want to do it well, I think the mental health first aid course, which you can in the US, I think it's mentalhealthfirstaid.org, and it's available in 22 different countries. That's a really, really good course to take because it teaches you how to identify if someone may be in a crisis situation. And even if they're not, it teaches you the techniques to listen empathetically and to respond appropriately in a way that is most likely to encourage someone to seek help. And that's really the key. You come with some information, but that information should be, hey, I know what are local mental health resources that are available, or I know that these are places that you could talk to. Like, I mean, how many of us could very quickly identify or find for someone who we think might be suicidal the, say a suicide hotline or support mechanism, or do we know what to do in that kind of a situation? And I think most of us really don't know what to do. We're not sure if we should ask. We're not sure what we should say. And those are things that you should be prepared for. And it's much more likely you're going to encounter somebody who's in a mental health crisis than it is. And it doesn't mean it's bad to learn CPR, for example. But it's much more likely you're going to run into that situation than it is you are going to, say, have to do CPR on somebody. I mean, unless you're an ET, EMT, or something of that nature. You're going to run into a lot more people with mental health issues.
Sure. I mean, people should see a MFCC, you know, or a licensed therapist. But I think there's a lot that we can do as far as community builders, as far as like being empathetic. I know Jeff was talking about WP Mom a lot lately, and just being a normal human being that's polite, that actually cares about people, when you ask them how they're doing, actually listening. There's a lot that we can do that I think can make people not feel isolated regardless of their diagnosis or lack of, because there's a lot of things that people go through that are temporary too, that aren't maybe DSM category illnesses, but we all go through transitions in our lives with our identity, with our job, with our feelings, navigating our emotions, and just being a normal friend can really help, because we're in a world where we work alone without coworkers, we isolate ourselves from human contact, we don't go to the store because Amazon is easier, and then we wonder why we feel kind of sad. Like it goes from clinical depression to just feeling disconnected from the entire planet.
I know there's certain times in my working remotely here for the past 3 or 4 years where, I sort of end up in a battle with myself, you know, psychologically in my mind where, you know, I want to do this, but my mind says no, or I feel this way, or I feel that way. And, you know, it doesn't get to the point where I've gone and sought out medical help or a professional opinion. But, you know, when you work in an isolated environment, it sure allows your mind to sort of take over at times.
And sometimes my subconscious is my nemesis.
Right.
I mean, it's the self-talk, right? Like, you know, oh, you get accepted to talk at a, or you get accepted to speak, and you're like, well, I'm not really qualified to do this. Well, they thought you were because they accepted you. Right?
And that's where the imposter syndrome comes in.
Right. Imposter syndrome, we joke about it, but it's just a lack of, it's a lack of confidence, a lack of validation. There's a lot of feedback loops that are missing in our remote work.
Now, one of the things I found a bit fascinating, Ed, is we have the Disability Act, and I know a lot of people, I think research has shown that people would be afraid to talk to their employer about mental health or if they've been diagnosed with a mental illness, for maybe fear of repercussions or fear of other things. But I believe that's covered under the Disability Act, or am I wrong on that?
Yeah, it is. It's the Americans with Disability Act, which states that if I'm not a lawyer, so keep that in mind. But then if your company has more than 15 employees, you are not allowed to discriminate against someone, either an existing employee or a potential employee, based on medical conditions. If you are able to make what is intentionally vague and called a reasonable accommodation, a reasonable accommodation can be a lot of things. But it does absolutely include mental health issues as disabilities as well. So that can include things like ADHD, that can include things like depression, anxiety disorders, other kinds of mood disorders, a number of things. So again, if you're able to make what, again, the law vaguely describes as a reasonable accommodation for you, for a potential employee or an existing employee, you're not allowed to discriminate against them on that basis. The problem with it is that it is next to impossible to prove it. And so, yes, it's illegal. It's also illegal to discriminate against someone if they plan to get married or pregnant, but it is quite common that people do discriminate against people who, particularly women, in those situations.
Yep.
And so it's a hard thing to prove, but yes, it is illegal. And we, in fact, created two different handbooks on ADA law and how it applies to mental health issues, one for employers and one for employees, so that you know your rights and responsibilities. And those are things that you can get off of our website as well.
Required reading for any human resources manager out there.
We'd like to say so. Yes, I think so. Yes, absolutely. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, if we look at the work environment and how things are changing, it certainly seems like working in isolation and being a remote worker is going to become the norm, you know, within the next, who knows how many years, or at least it'll be a major part of how companies do work. And, you know, who knows if that'll lead to an increase of diagnosis with mental health or mental illness, or maybe that will raise awareness. I'm not sure, but it'll be interesting to see how the increase of remote work ties into all of this.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question.
Raise the awareness level.
For one, I do work remotely, and I have for about the past 7 years, but I also do not – I don't like to work at my house, and I just won't. So I work at a co-working studio, and I do that intentionally because I don't want to be alone at my house all the time. I get pretty squirrely if I do. So that's something for me that works out well. It works out a lot better if I have the opportunities to be around people. To some extent, but I also can, you know, go in a conference room, or I can get some privacy if I need it too. So, I always sort of, yeah, for me, I don't like working at home. Now I know a lot of people who do it and they do well with it, but I just personally don't like doing that.
Yeah. I work at home and I'm fine with it. It's great because of my childcare issues with my dog, who you heard earlier. Sorry, I wasn't fast enough on the mute. But I also go to meetups and I do things with my friends and I go out and I make myself walk and be outside, because if I don't, I just start getting in that snowball with my brain And that isolation is a terrible thing. I gave a talk about this in Atlanta. You know, it's against the Geneva Convention. Like, we don't do this, but we volunteered to do this as WordPress professionals that work remotely. So it's really important to be around your peers in some way, shape, or form, because then you do see what really is normal. Oh, all of you guys go through this? I read an article that said 1 out of 3 entrepreneurs suffer depression, and the general population is 7%. So how many WordPressers do you know that are entrepreneurs? It's a problem. It's something that needs to be discussed more. I'm glad that you're having this podcast.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you two are on.
I'm
doing my part to raise awareness.
You're doing a good job, Jeff.
we talked about this earlier, and I brought this up on Twitter. And mainly it was in response to the presentation I watched by Leo Gopal at WordCamp Cape Town, South Africa in 2016. But he talks about these three words called, how are ya? And, you know, my default response for me is, well, I'm fine. That's just the way I answer. I think that's the way a lot of people answer it. But to the people who genuinely care about your response, and maybe they'll dig a little deeper because perhaps they know you a little bit, or they know they can find out what's really going on. You know, maybe they start telling you things that, no, they're not fine, and this is what they're going through. But Leo says that those three words from members of the WordPress community at different points throughout the year, where they genuinely cared about how he was, those things can change and even possibly save someone's life. And I found that fascinating.
I wholeheartedly agree.
And just wondering maybe your thoughts on maybe just asking people, you know, how are they?
I think the reason why we don't ask, and Ed can maybe correct or elaborate, is because we don't want the answer. The answer makes us uncomfortable because we know that we're not licensed. We know that we're not equipped to deal with it. But sometimes all you need to do is say, you know what? I'm really sorry that you're going through that, and not offer one single solution except for that one time. Because I've been going through this and grief is not convenient, I can't schedule it for 2 p.m. on Thursday. I was at US and I had a breakdown. I was just crying, couldn't stop crying. And Justine Pretorius just held me for like 20 minutes. I couldn't stop crying. There's nothing you can do to fix it. It's not fixable. You just have to go through it sometimes. Like, that's just a normal emotion, right? So sometimes it's just somebody saying, how are you? And then giving a crap for the answer, and then using empathy to say, you know what? I'm really sorry you're going through that right now. And not saying, well, at least. Yeah. There's a video by Brené Brown where she talks about empathy and the people that say, well, at least. Well, at least, I can't tell you how many people have said, well, at least you had a love. So am I supposed to live for the next 40 years by myself, you weirdo? Like, because I had love for 23 years, I'm now excluded from the dating pool forever? Have you lost your mind? Like, the things that people say to you, they make you so angry because you go, yeah, I guess I already hit the love lottery. Now I can just live my life as a eunuch for the next 45 years or however I live. You know what I mean? It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And remember when I was talking about like what we say and what we don't say, that's not to say that we can do nothing and that we have no ability to help one another.
Right.
What I should say is that there's a lot of things that we tend to do that are not helpful.
Yes.
That trying to fix the problem for somebody is usually not helpful. And trying to tell somebody, well, hey, at least it's not this, or this person has it worse, generally does not actually make anybody feel better. It certainly doesn't make me feel any better.
Now, probably it makes them feel worse.
It is worse.
Honestly, yes.
It's dismissive. It's so dismissive.
Yeah. I've never understood that, and I've had people do that to me frequently. And the thing is, they're just trying to help. They really are. They're just trying to help, and they don't know, but they don't know sort of the helpful things to do.
Yeah.
And the important thing is to figure out what are the helpful things you can do, and then practice those things in your life. And one of the things I talk about that I encourage people to do in terms of what can you do right now to help help with mental health in where you are right now. And one of the key things I tell folks is to tell people that they matter.
Yes.
Tell them how they impact your life positively and how strong and how great they are, because everybody needs to hear that. Everybody does. But particularly people whose brains lie to them need to know that they matter to other people, and they need to hear from the outside that no, you're actually a good person, and that what you think right now is not accurate. What your brain is telling you is not accurate. What you're feeling, that you do matter.
Yes.
And many of us don't feel that way. And it can be very, very isolating emotionally.
I agree with that, Ed, yeah. Because, I mean, I've had to learn to say my perception is real and valid. I've had to say that at work. My perception is real and valid. Mm-hmm. My experience is true. You can't tell me that this isn't true. Right? So my opinion is not wrong. My experience isn't wrong. It's not something that's valid, but in our world, we work with ones and zeros and people who think in a binary fashion. And so they want to say, well, you're wrong. I know that I'm wrong. I know that it's true that I matter on this planet. If I had to sit down and write 100 reasons why I matter, I could probably do it. It didn't stop me from crying on Monday night thinking I don't belong on this planet anywhere with anyone. That's the real issue is what we know is true follows logic. Emotions do not follow logic. I know that what I'm feeling is not accurate, but the feeling is still valid and true. And that is what our minds have a hard time with personally and when we're helping other people.
Yeah, one of the statistics that Leo said in this presentation is that, and this was in 2016, that on average, I think someone who is dealing with a mental illness, it takes them about 10 years to get diagnosed. And I don't know if that figure is still accurate, but I wonder how many people out there who are going through potentially a mental illness issue don't know really what's going on. And you know, either through pride or either through stubbornness or just trying to battle themselves, you know, trying to say, I don't know what's going on, but I can get through this. And they just, you know, keep going through this endless cycle until maybe somehow, some way, you know, they end up going to seek professional help. And then they say, well, this is what's going on. And then, you know, it's like a light bulb moment. Now, I just wonder how many people out there are struggling right now, fighting with themselves.
More than
because of the pride factor, that they don't want to be told maybe that there's something wrong with them mentally.
It might not even be pride, Jeff. It may be that is what they think is normal. So like I talked about it earlier, like with dysfunction. Dysfunction is a broken communication system. And so when I left dysfunction and got married to a person who didn't grow up that way, we had a lot of trouble communicating in our early marriage because I didn't know how to communicate in a healthy way. Back to the healthy part, right? Healthy is being able to say what you feel and not being at World War III. Like I can say, no, I'm offended, and it doesn't have to be a big giant fight. Oh, you mean the ambulance and the police and people don't have to come because I say that I'm upset about something. Wow, this is a new experience for me. Like sometimes you don't even know it's a possibility. Or with me, I knew it ran in my family, but I excused it off as grief. I mislabeled it. I misdiagnosed it. I misattributed the reason until I went to my doctor. So sometimes an education, not having self-awareness, experiences that you had early on, and the things that we experience in the first 5 to 25 years of our life are really important. Our brain is not finished until we're 25 years old. This is why you have a discount on your auto insurance. It's biology is biology.
Oh, yeah, right.
So with that said, What are your plans for 2017 and in general? How can we continue to raise awareness and wow, you know, that's big news that you're going to OSMI. That's going to be your full-time gig. So you must really be growing, you know, passion project now, full-time gig.
Yeah, well, money-wise, maybe not growing as to the extent that you would normally need to go off and do your own thing. But from the standpoint of do we have enough time to do everything we want to do? No, we don't. It's a big motivator. There are a lot of things that we just have the bandwidth to do on for just being an all volunteer, find what time whenever we kind of do it inside organization. And so I the big things for this year that we're looking at are a lot of work that's expanding stuff that we've read.
Yeah, speaking of bandwidth, it sounds like that co-working space is using up all your bandwidth. You're cutting in and out.
Netflix.
Cutting in and out.
Let me go ahead and I'll go. You want me to disconnect and reconnect again?
Yeah, sure. Try reconnecting. Bridget will keep me company.
Yeah, I'm actually applying to speak on a topic called WordPress. Backward compatibility is good for WordPress, not your mental health. So I'm currently working on that, and I've been brainstorming with a few of my developer friends and breaking changes in your self-talk. Mm. So, hey, Ed.
All right, so let's see if Ed's back.
How you doing?
There we go. We're going pretty good. All right, now it sounds good. So,
the things that we have going on for this year, there's a few different things that we're kind of planning on. The first are attending and sponsoring conferences, basically trying to have a presence at conferences. So, trying to identify as many as we can and find
audio to do it. Sorry about that, Ed, but the audio is just you're cutting in and out. It's so bad that, it's my listeners are going to be like, ooh, what's going on? So,
I'm sure they are.
They're going to attend a lot more conferences, that's for sure. That's one thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, as Ed gets situated there in his co-working space where he cannot control the Wi-Fi environments, you know, tell the people stop all the uploading. That's what causes it. But he's probably moving around. He'll probably be back in a little bit to tell us what's going on with OSMI. But Bridget, you've been doing a lot of great things, and like I said, just asking people how are they, just generally being curious about how people are doing. I mean, here we are, we're living, there's so many of us who are working in our own little cubicles inside our home. It's outside, it's a lawn chair. And a lot of these people, remote work teams, I mean, there are teams of two or three people. And they're usually working by themselves, and their coworkers are spread out across different states or different countries. So, it's important to have some sort of support group, and that could be Slack, or it could be like for you, you definitely emphasize in-person meetups, human beings.
I also write too, Jeff. So I started writing on Medium because it doesn't belong on BridgetWiller.com. Posts like I'm an emotional athlete or what if I'm not okay? Because that's what I was talking about, emotional hospitality. I think this is a way to be an advocate. It's you yourself decide, I'm going to be open about this. And then I get tons of direct messages and private chats and private text messages. So I think being open yourself invites people to also be open with you. So.
And I see we got Ed back. Ed, did you move to a different corner of the co-working space?
I did, and I switched my which Wi-Fi SSID I was on.
Really good.
Wow, you sound excellent now. So now you may have the floor again.
Okay, well, I'll try to get this out before it goes again. But real quickly, the primary things are speaking and attending conferences, particularly having tables there and being like a sponsor in kind or a nonprofit sponsor at a conference, having booths there, really important for us. Also expanding and enhancing our resources in terms of our handbooks, our videos, things of that nature. We're doing a lot of work there. Then a third thing is a lot more outreach to mental health professionals to engage with them, to make sure that our materials are up to snuff, and figuring out ways that we can continue to get input from them and help them advise us on what kind of resources to make available. And then just doing a lot more deep dives into data analysis and data collection that we've done. Like I said, we've done some of the only research that's available in the IT industry regarding mental health. We want to keep that up because that stuff makes a huge difference in terms of figuring out where we are and where we need to go.
Excellent. Awesome. So you're doing great work with OSMI. Congratulations on making it your full-time gig to take it to the next level. And Bridget, I want to thank you for being on the show, for sharing
Thanks
your
for
valuable
having me.
Insight. And Ed, how can people get in touch with you and learn more about what you're doing with OSMI?
Yeah, the best place is to go on the web to OSMI Help, OSMIHELP.org. And you can find us on Twitter at OSMI Help, on Facebook at OSMI Help, just facebook.com/OSMI Help. And you can email us at info@OSMIHelp.org.
And one last question before I let you get out of here, but another sort of mental health passion project that was started is called WP Hugs by Leo Gopal. Which is,
yeah,
you know, he's aiming to create a safe space for people to open up because he knows all about the stigma and the things associated with mental health. He's got a great free Slack group over there. There's about 10 or a dozen people over there that are sharing their stories, that are opening up to each other. And, you know, and he's got a great idea with the channel. One of the channels he's got over there is named How Are You? So you just go in there and people ask you, hey, how are you? And people I've seen from in the channel are generally they're open, they're honest, and other people are like, yeah, you know, I've had those days. This is what I've done to help me get through those days and to get back on feeling normal. So it's turning out to be quite a cool little community over there. It's called WP Hugs.
Yes, yeah, WP Hugs is really cool. Another one I want to highlight that's available to folks. It's not WordPress specific, but the WP Hugs is great. There's also one called Mental Health Support. And I'll go ahead and I don't know if other people can see it, but I'm going to go ahead and put the URL in our chat and maybe you can share that around. But it's another place on Slack that's specifically just for talking with people, basically a support group. That you can find online if you want to use Slack. That's a good way and a good place. I've been there for a number, been in there for, it's been there open at least a year. So that's Mental Health Support is a good Slack that I gave you the link there for. And then also the WP Hugs project is really cool. And there's a lot of good discussion in there and a lot of good support.
And Bridget, thank you for being on the show. And how can people get in touch with you? And do you have, you just mentioned the camp or the WordCamp presentation you're working on. How can people get in touch with you, follow you, stalk you online?
Oh, 20 pages deep on Google of a Bridget Willard search. But you can also find me at You Too Can't Be Guru on Twitter, BridgetWillard.com. Also, I'm the marketing manager for GiveWP.com. I write all of my mental health things on Medium.com because it doesn't belong on BridgetWillard.com. That's about social media. And in person, you know, I'm a pretty open person. I feel like it's a good way to live. It's really helped me be more content. So, yeah, I encourage that.
Very cool.
And I think one piece of advice I wanted to give people out there is, you know, in the advent of social media, we've run into this situation where too many people are maybe they're going through a bout of depression and they start going on Facebook, Twitter, maybe more Facebook than anything, and they start comparing what's going on in their life and their troubles to other people's highlight reels. And you know, we gotta stop doing that. We gotta find a way to not do that and realize that, you know, a lot of the things that people are sharing are just like the great moments of their life, but you know, there's so many other probably things we have no idea that's going on. And you know, I find a lot of people struggling with that in these days.
Yeah, nobody takes a selfie when they're crying.
Right.
It's ridiculous. Right. That's not real life. That's the whole thing.
Wanted to throw that out there. I wanted to thank you guys again for coming on. I think, doing our part here on Reason Awareness for Mental Health. I hope it helps one of our listeners out there. Again, OSMI and WP Hugs. And again, thank you for coming on the show, and we'll have you back on probably in the near future.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Oh, there you have it. So great episode, great guest. I wanted to get through a couple of news stories here before I wrap up the show. And by the way, if you guys have to go anywhere, this is feel free to leave because I'm just going to wrap up the show here with some news. WordPress 4.7.5 was released today. Not today. It's actually yesterday. It has fixes for 6 security issues. So if you're managing multiple sites, want to make sure you have those sites updated. Most of them probably should have auto-updated. There's a couple of different security issues that were fixed. Actually, several other vulnerability reports came from researchers that are on HackerOne, which, by the way, WordPress now has a page. They're now officially part of HackerOne. So it's kind of a neat way if you're a security researcher and you like digging through WordPress, finding bugs, you could probably get paid to do that now. So could be a nice little side gig for you. And on the Tavern, I also wrote an article about what you can expect in WordPress 4.8. The too long didn't read version is that there's not going to be any major features in 4.8. However, it does set the stage for Gutenberg, which is the new visual editor that people are really excited about. That'll probably be coming in 4.9 or later, but this sets the stage for that. There's going to be a couple of cool core widgets. Image, video, and audio widgets. Now, adding that kind of content to the sidebar would be a hell of a lot easier than using custom HTML within a text widget. There's also this neat little thing called link boundaries, which is kind of hard to describe, but it kind of gives you a visual cue of when you're inside the link element when you're writing using the visual editor. And, of course, the dashboard news widget has been modified, so now if you type in your location, it will tell you WordPress meetups and WordCamps nearby to your location. It's kind of their way of reminding you that communities exist around you and reminding people all around the world about the various WordPress communities. So that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes on wptavern.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, J-E-F-F-R-0. And until next week, everybody have a safe, enjoyable rest of the week. Enjoy your weekend. I'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. So long, everybody.